Ladies and gentlemen, welcome once again to the Student of the Game. I am Kyle Nash, the Student of the Game, and to my left, or right, or across from me, or however you want to put, Stephen Weasel Hurley, ready to bring you all sorts of action and football talk, just the way you like it here on the Student of the Game. Of course, we are brought to you by the National Gridiron Network. You can hear us on Blog Talk Radio, iHeartRadio, Spreaker, and so many other places, and coming soon on selected shows, Google Hangouts. Man, we are spreading our circle of influence worldwide, and it all starts with the help of this one man right here. Give it up, Weasel Weez!
Yeah, boy!
Hey, that's what it is. You got a cold or something? What was that?
No.
Not your best yeah, boy. I got to tell you, I was a little disappointed. I don't know. You're running late today, though. You came in. You might still be short of breath. I'll let you go on that one. That's okay. Anyways, guys, I got to tell you, we got an awesome show today. Of course, we will be talking free agency like we do to keep you abreast of the situation here in the NFL. Another move that, for one of Weasel's teams there coming up, very interesting stuff I think we need to talk about. And also for those that are crawled under a rock somewhere, DeSean Jackson found a home. We'll get into that later as well. And then, 7:45, 15 minutes into the show, we will have a very special guest. This guy is among one of my favorite personalities out there. Very solid guy, Brandon Pemberton, Brandon on Sports. And an NFL NBA draft scout, just a whole lot of awesome. This guy buries himself in front of film and then breaks it down. We're talking granular, okay? We're talking into powder with his information and then bakes it into a beautiful loaf of football knowledge bread. Did you like that analogy? I was kind of, it's because I'm fat.
It was all right. You're good.
Okay. Weasel approves. I'm good with that. Because I'll tell you what, if I get it wrong, Weasel's going to tell me. That's okay. That's why he's here. Weasel, Weasel.
Yeah, boy.
Much better. I am approving of that one. Anyways, let's go ahead and get right to it now that we have all the fun in place here. First off, one of your teams, like I said, Weasel, the Pittsburgh Steelers involved in free agency here, as they have been often the past few seasons. Shedding players that are longer in the tooth. Last year it was James Harrison who departed, became a Bengal. Already talks of Lamar Woodley and his movement. And now safety, Ryan Clark, longtime Steeler staple. Steeler staple, I like that. Steeler staple and actually influential player in the NFL Players Association as a side note. But talks are he is moving from Pittsburgh to the Washington Redskins. I got to tell you, Weasel, the more we talk about the AFC North in general, the more it's becoming kind of a question mark to really know what's going on in that division. I mean, I picked the Bengals to do well in it and tie with the Ravens record-wise last year. But I was the only one, I think, that had the Bengals actually making the playoffs, so there's that. And then they come out in their first playoff game this year, and again, losing the first round due to some less than stellar play by key offensive players. I'll put it that way. Most of it, blame, of course, as always, in football, going on the quarterback, Andy Dalton. But then it looked, well, the Bengals will have an easy time coming back, and they might have to put up with the Browns. It appears that the Steelers are trying to make moves to go back to the days of old. LeGarrette Blount, of course, becoming part of that running game here. They did part ways with Emmanuel Sanders. But now Ryan Clark's leaving. They've departed with Lamar Woodley. I don't know what to make of what's going on here, but I can assume it being the Rooneys and all that, there's going to be a whole lot of reliance on the draft when it comes to the Steelers' thoughts.
Yeah, definitely on the defensive side of the football. Usually the Steelers, no matter what year, they usually draft the linebacker in the first round.
Yeah.
And, got to be good on the defense. And some of the guys, yeah, they're getting old. Mm-hmm. It's going to be a very veteran-ish team.
Veteran-ish, so, I like that. Yeah. Ike Taylor, Polamalu. Britt Kiesel, I think, is they're going to drag him out for one more year, yeah, or two. I don't even know, man. Long in the tooth, long in the beard, whatever you are, Brent Kiesel is still playing. That's all I'm saying.
And so, yeah, most of the time in the draft, it's like early on will be defense. Mm-hmm. But they did a great job in getting LeGarrette Blount. He did great for the Patriots. I mean, the guy had 7 touchdowns, 772 yards.
Regular season.
And yeah, and he had
a strong performance against the Colts. We talked about that a little bit.
Yep, so... hopefully they can get back to the like the Jerome Bettis kind of days where you just feed him the football and hopefully he can wear down the defenses. So
well, yeah, and I'll tell you, but the problem is that you can have a running game all day, but as we're noting, they're kind of wearing away on that defense an awful lot. They're relying on Troy Polamalu still. I don't know how much longer that can last. They're going to part ways with Ryan Clark here. You mentioned the linebacking emphasis that team puts. Mm-hmm. And, of course, if you run a 3-4, I'm a big proponent of having the linebacker core on your team have the same depth that you have at the bottom of the Pacific Ocean. Ha, cheesy pun. But what I'm trying to get to is this. If they're shopping all these guys, the replacement's got to come from somewhere. And it'll be very curious to see what they do in the draft to fill those voids, keeping it in the AFC North Sea. Something that kind of shocked me. We talked an awful lot about the Texans and them, their looks to drafting another quarterback upcoming. We talked about Blake Bortles, of course, Johnny Manziel, Teddy Bridgewater, their pro days and how much, whether they do or don't matter, but how much their stock is still affected, all this other kind of stuff. And, of course, when we have the discussion, we say they have basically one receiver, in Andre Johnson, who's already unhappy to be there, and then they have their tight end, who's a good receiver as well. Well, apparently that's changing too. Owen Daniels relocating from the Houston Texans to the Baltimore Ravens. Now, I know you're going to say, but Cal, they have Dennis Pitta. Okay, that's great, but Pitta is recovering from a pretty bad injury. He did eventually make an appearance during the season last year. I'm a Dennis Pitta guy. I think he's pretty solid. I like what he does. You know, he makes the best of what he can and certainly provides another option when the field is opened up by Torrey Smith and now Steve Smith as well. Ooh, T. Smith and S. Smith. S. T. Smith. Saint Smith in the receiver core, possibly. Yeah, that's kind of cheesy. Anyway, so, but with all that field being stretched, you have Dennis Pitta in the fold. Gotta tell you, I like the Ravens making this acquisition, and frankly, the house that's being cleaned in Houston, I think they're really just kind of blowing up the team at this point. Weasel, walk me through your thoughts on the Owen Daniels move.
Well, Owen Daniels, he was very productive with the Texans at tight end, and they got rid of their quarterback, and
Right, Schaub is now a Raider.
Yeah, so I don't know if you can call it maybe rebuilding or not, but I'm just wondering if they're going to go Clowney or a quarterback, because the thing is they're trying to trade out of the first spot.
Good luck with that.
Which, yeah, I don't think it's, no one's going to want, I think, one of those quarterbacks that bad. But,
well, yeah.
Do you get the dominant duo defensive end with
a dominant defensive end duo? Dang. See what I did there?
With Clowney, and you got
oh, come on. America's favorite man crush? JJ Watt. Welcome back to the show, Weasel. Okay.
All right. So so they got to make a choice. You want the to dominate more in defense, or do you believe in one of those quarterbacks?
Well, see, I like what you're saying there, but that's just in terms of the first round. It doesn't have to be an either or, and I'm glad you're bringing this theory up, because I'm going to prove I pay attention to his show before he comes on mine, at least. And, no, I'm just kidding. I always check out Sports Trap Radio on Sports Chronicles Radio Network, comes on Thursdays. I usually check out the podcast as soon as I can at work because, hey, let's put it this way, I'd rather listen to football talk than the sound of my fingers hitting keyboards. Keyboards hitting fingers. That's actually kind of painful. Anyways, no. But what I'm trying to say is this. You say it as if it's a mutually exclusive thing. They have to do this or this. I got to remind you, my friend, there are certain other beings out there, such as, say, a Derek Carr, a Mike Garoppolo, perhaps, a number of other quarterbacks that can easily make a move on in the second round, quite possibly, third round even, if we're talking about Garoppolo, and get Jadeveon Clowney, which, by the way, let's be abundantly clear of something, folks. I don't know about you, but I'm deeply intimidated by the pairing that is the man crush, JJ Sawat. And the possibility that a Jadeveon Clowney could be on the other side. Just damn it. Just a nice tall glass of scary right there. Of course, you know, as a good friend of the show that has tweeted at us here, G. Stelio, says something about Bill O'Brien, the new head coach of the Texans, being a guy who could force pieces to work in a respectable offense. Well, what does that have to do with the Patriots? Hi-yo! No, I'm just kidding. But seriously, when I say that, that's a legitimate point, and if that comes to task, you can then again get Clowney, then get one of these other quote unquote lower level quarterbacks. Because let's be real, as awesome as I think it is to have a quarterback that attended Harvard and graduated, okay? Ryan Fitzpatrick, no, I'm sorry. Now, I'll grant, he hasn't had the benefit of great teams surrounding him, playing in the with the Bills and doing all that, having to back up Jake Locker and the Titans. Let's just put it this way. Those situations, at best, are just as good as the ones that the Texans have right now. Right. So they're going to have this veteran bring in. No. They're going to bring in the best defense they can to buy as much time for the Arian Nation, Arian Foster, on the ground to do what he does, I guess. Of course, now that they're less a tight end, who's going to be the valve?
Yeah.
I mean, if you're a rookie quarterback, the saying goes, your best friend is that tight end because, you know, when you're in trouble, he's the easiest pass, biggest target, fill in the blank. You were going
to
say?
I think it could be similar to, like, the Cleveland Browns a couple years ago where they drafted Trent Richardson,
mm-hmm.
and they jumped back into the first round and they got Brandon Whedon.
Yes.
So if the Texans do go and get Clowney, then I can see them in the second round. They have the number one pick. Either use that pick or most likely they'll trade up for that quarterback they want. The Browns did it for an older Whedon, and if they want a certain guy like the guy from Alabama or
AJ McCarron,
yeah, David Carr or anything like
Derek
that.
Derek Carr.
Derek, I think got you. He's got his. I think his brother was there.
Got you.
So, but yeah, trading on up for that quarterback. So we shall see.
All right, and yeah, no, all legitimate points there too. And I mean, look, here's what I think it is, honestly, Weasel. Every year, the team with the first pick is throwing that head fake. Oh, we're totally shopping for a trade. Look, okay, they're just hoping some sucker is going to be like, we want the first round pick, and actually kind of basically do what the Browns did to get Trent Richardson. But, I mean, that's basically what it comes down to, is they're just looking for that sucker to give them a better opportunity to get multiple top-level players in this draft. There's, you know, and let's not forget, there's a lot of quality beef in addition to Jadeveon Clowney. There's quality defensive tackles in this draft. There's a lot of solid offensive linemen in this draft, which we will certainly get into with our very own Brandon Pemberton shortly here. And I think to just simply say, hey, let's get a quarterback, there's another element here, too, that I don't think has been brought up enough, is we are still spoiled from Luck, from RG3, from Russell Wilson, from Ryan Tannehill, from, and I'm going back a number of years, than just the one you were talking, just the draft we were talking about with Wilson and Luck and RG3. You know, there's a bunch of rookie quarterbacks that saw success immediately. Cam Newton, you know, Andy Dalton, I think, is a third round pick himself. That's wasn't supposed to happen, started happening, then 2012 happened. Now, last year, we're getting brought back down to earth a little bit. Everybody kind of realized that Geno Smith and, you know, EJ Manuel, not all that in a bag of chips like many people may have thought. And I really felt like we were in a place where drafting that quarterback in the first round pick wasn't the best move. I mean, it might have made more sense in drafting a running back in the first round, but, you know, don't tell that to any of the Browns fans. Actually, they now agree. They feel like they made out like bandits when Trent Richardson got shipped for a first rounder to Indy. So, I mean, there's an opportunity there to kind of rescue things as it were. But, you know, talking about picks, talking about moves, I find it very interesting. We talk about draft picks in the first round, or lack thereof in this particular case. The Skins mortgaged a lot to get RG3 and just made a lot of moves. And now, my understanding is, and I'll confirm this with Brandon Pemberton when he comes on, because I know he'll know better than I do. They don't have a first round pick, I don't believe.
The Redskins?
Yeah.
Yep, it's gone to the St. Louis Rams at number 2.
Bam. And what was that in connection to, I wonder? Oh, it was RG3. Boom. So with all that in mind,
it's a great way for the Rams to end that trade, because it's like last year they bumped back a couple times, mm-hmm. to gather more picks. And this year, the way the cards flow, you got the number two overall pick from the Redskins. And that's pretty crazy. And I could see them possibly, you know, jumping back again and maybe trade out the second pick.
I mean, at this point, look, I mean, we're talking about the Rams again. From my point of view, their biggest need is inevitably and overwhelmingly replacing Sam Bradford. Not so much that I think he's a bad quarterback or a bad football player, but you in the tub, you ain't winning games. You ain't making a difference. And, you know, when it comes to the Washington Redskins, they made their splash last week bringing in DeSean Jackson, which we touched on slightly on last Monday's show because they had just cut him at that point. And really, to go from having no first-round pick to acquiring an impact player like DeSean Jackson, regardless of what you think about his personality, on a football field, is a fantastic move. On that, I cannot front. I don't know, Weasel?
I think with when you get a guy like D-Jack, I mean, the guy is, you know, he's pretty explosive. The guy can, I mean, great at wide receiver. He can be that number one, which the Redskins, I think they expected, you know, Santana Moss to be, you know, that number one guy. But,
well, Pierre Garçon, at the very least.
Yeah, but for getting D-Jack, I mean, that was a great move. And if you were to trade for D-Jack for DeSean Jackson, you would most likely give up a first-round pick. So
maybe. I mean, you're talking just in terms of football. When you, there's other politics that come into view, like
games.
You know, allegedly. Be careful. You're going to get a suit, man.
Allegedly.
This guy. I can't keep him under control. So you know what? I'm going to go ahead and bring in our guest. Maybe he'll have some hope of getting a little bit of a little ease out of Weasel's tone here at the moment. But the man I speak of is a talent I thoroughly enjoy listening to. I don't just hype this guy up. I don't just talk about this guy because it's fun to do when he's a member of my network, which he actually kind of happens to be. But I genuinely enjoy what this guy does. I learn things listening to this guy. You'll find him on Tuesday nights here on the National Gridiron Network, a member of the NGN weekly panel on Tuesday nights. You'll also find him Thursday nights on the Sports Chronicles Radio Network. Brandon on Sports is his Twitter handle and the website. Give it up for the man himself, Mr. Brandon Pemberton. BP, what's going on, my man?
What's up, Kyle? How you doing, bro?
Oh, man. I'll tell you what. I've been jittery the whole time, like from about 7 o'clock on doing my show prep, making sure I could get things as right as I could to just follow this ride. I got my notes here. I left my iPad in the other room, but you know what? I'm going to old school it, write down notes when you're talking. I am accenting the word student on Student of the Game today when you talk, brother.
Thanks. I appreciate you having me on, man.
And, you know, let's go ahead and get right to it, man. I know we were talking, hyping you up, talking about draft first, but you happened to time it very well, or did I time it, teehee, to talk about DeSean Jackson and his acquisition from the Redskins. Now, you being a Philly guy, an Eagles guy, I know the first thing off the bat that comes to your mind is this top-level player not only left your house, but now you're going to face him twice a year. I'm sure Philly fans loved that.
I mean, the Philadelphia fans they're upset. If you listen to local radio here, then, you know, people that, you know, I talk to on a daily basis that, you know, come to me for my knowledge and stuff like that. I mean, you have some people that, you know, want to buy in, you know, because basically, in my opinion, this is a Chip Kelly move. When Chip Kelly was hired, they gave him final say on personnel. So, in my opinion, this is a Chip Kelly move. So, you had the people here in Philadelphia that, you know, watch for us, Chip Kelly. It's a system. We could spread the ball around. They brought in Darren Sproles. Jeremy Maclin is coming back. We're okay with that. But then you have a person like me who, you know, I watch the film and I understand the game and I understand that having a system is fine, but having players that can play and make plays is another thing. Bill Walsh had a system in San Francisco, but he also had Joe Montana. He had Jerry Rice. He had Brent Jones. He had Roger Craig. He had Steve Young. You know, he had players in that system. So Chip Kelly being an offensive mind is a great thing. DeSean Jackson had his best season as a pro in that system. He did what Randy Reed failed to do, which is move DeSean around, put him in the slot, put him in motion, put him in the backfield, not just run him on nine routes. And DeSean played very well.
Yeah, had arguably a career year.
Huh?
He had arguably a career year.
Yeah, I mean, he had his best year. But DeSean Jackson also did some things himself to put himself in a position where as though Chip Kelly felt as though that he couldn't be here.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? DeSean Jackson allegedly had disrespected his coach, cursed him out in front of the team, a thing which I had a hard time dealing with, being as though there's other players on this team and nobody had the testicular fortitude to grab DeSean by his neck and tell him to sit his behind down somewhere and shut up. That's what I have a big-time issue with. You know what I mean? If that really has happened. DeSean has been late to meetings. DeSean has missed meetings. DeSean has been late to practice. DeSean Jackson has cursed out and gotten into it with his position coach on the sidelines. I mean, he's done some things as well, but at this point, being as though here in Philadelphia, it's a lot of stuff that's being reported. Nobody's putting a name to it. The NewJersey.com report, you know, all of a sudden out of the blue, Elliot Shores Parks, who can't write his way out of a paper bag, comes up with, you know, gets the information in this story. He hasn't written a good story in 4 or 5 years. I mean, I'm not trying to slam the guy, but he's not good. All of a sudden, bam, 20, 30 minutes before DeSean gets cut, Elliot Shores Parks has this story. Now, he's denying saying that the Eagles didn't give him the information. You know, but, I mean, here in Philadelphia, the speculation is that, and the NFL Players Association is looking into it, how did he get this information, stuff that the Eagles knew 2 or 3 years ago, and all of a sudden it's brought up right before the point in which the Eagles cut DeSean. I mean, so here in Philadelphia, it's never born. The Eagles' best wide receiver is now in D.C. The Eagles going to have to face him for 2 years. RG3 is coming back healthy, full off season. They just started team workouts today. You pair DeSean with Pierre Garçon, Jordan Reed coming back from injury, and, you know, now you have to deal with that on the Redskins side. Now, you know, it's all good on paper. You know, the games have to be played. But at the end of the day, the Eagles ended up losing their best wide receiver, the guy who took the top off the defense. The reason why LeSean McCoy never had 8 in the box. The reason why Riley Cooper got paid $5 million, you know, 5 years, $25 million this year. That guy's gone. So people here say, oh, well, they can replace him. The draft this, the draft that. Yes, I scout the draft. I understand that this year's draft class is the deepest I've scouted in 12 years of doing this. But DeSean Jackson was a known commodity in the NFL. When you came out the game plan for the Eagles, DeSean Jackson, you had to make sure he didn't beat you over the top.
Absolutely.
And right now the Eagles don't have that.
No, go ahead, Brandon. I'm sorry. I was. You moved me with your preaching. I'm just following you, man. Keep going.
Oh no, I'm just saying. Right now, I mean, the Eagles lost that. They don't have that. You know, Nick Foles completed 71% of his passes to DeSean Jackson last year. Prior to that, Michael Vick over the past two seasons only completed 55% of his passes to DeSean. I mean, so now Nick Foles doesn't have his best weapon. Shady McCoy doesn't have him. Riley Cooper, Zach Ertz, Brent Celek. I mean, nobody can sit and legitimately tell me that the Eagles' offense is better without him. They can't tell me that the Eagles are a better football team without DeSean Jackson. And Chip Kelly, you know, being the guy that he is, you know, right now he, you know, acts like he's invented football. Well, now you have to prove to me as a guy who covers the team, and you want to prove to these fans here in Philadelphia that losing DeSean Jackson wasn't a big deal. I can replace him, and the Eagles will continue to have a top-5 offense next year.
Yeah, I follow a lot of what you're saying there. I mean, and Ivan said it when we first talked about it last week after he got cut on Friday, that I know that the Eagles may still win that division because it ain't looking pretty solid as a division goes. Let's call it what it is. You know, the Cowboys are mid-level at best. They needed a coin flip to get to the 16 pick. That you can't get any more mid-level in the NFL than that. Okay? Then, you know, there's all that's going wrong or went wrong last year with the Giants. Will they bounce back? Will they not? I don't know. Then you have the whole situation in D.C. before they got D-Jack, of course. Not to say that DeSean Jackson will suddenly, through a miracle, make RG3 great. The Eagles may still be able to win that division. However, anyone who's saying that they're a better team without DeSean Jackson, now granted, I'm not hanging out in Philly. I don't know the difference. But those that are flowing that, even goofy guy from Orlando, going to be able to tell you that's crazy. But at the end of the day, I'll ask you this. True or false on this. Give you a bit of a pop quiz because you're a guest here. The Eagles will still make the playoffs, but have taken themselves out of Super Bowl contention with the DeSean Jackson move. True or false?
I mean, they weren't in Super Bowl contention. Whiffen's still there. So,
there you
I
go.
Mean, they've taken themselves even more out of Super Bowl contention losing them. So, I guess that's true.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And actually, I would have said the same thing based on the defense, which is what I thought they would look to improve in this draft, to them make themselves more complete. But then all of a sudden, this happens. I'll say this. I did very much like the talk with the Darren Sproles move, but that ain't going to replace D-Jack. I'm definitely on your page with that, my friend. Let me go ahead, because I want to get into this draft talk with you here. Let's go ahead and take a break. Break real quick early, and then it'll be time to let you shine and preview your action from not only your article on the National Gridiron Network where you had your top tackles listed, but just your all-around draft awesome. That's what I'll be looking into right here after the break. You are listening to the National Gridiron Network.
The National Gridiron Network. Join as we tell you what is happening with your favorite team in the NFL or the NCAA. Listen in as we preview every football game week by week to the end of the season. Follow us at NationalGridironNetwork.com and read up on the latest that is happening across the football landscape. NGN, football talk, just the way you like it.
And we are back here on the National Gridiron Network bringing you football talk just the way you like it here. Of course, I am with the one and only Brandon Pemberton as a guest, and I can't forget my co-host, Stephen Weasel Hurley. Weasel Weasel!
Yeah, boy!
There he is. He's still awake. He's still alive. He was listening very intently, though, to all the awesome we had with BP talking up to DeSean Jackson. But enough of that. I'm not looking to trouble you and your Eagles fanhood. I'm here to learn stuff. I am here to see what goes on, and who better to hear it from? Not some guy who talks about a four-letter network. Not anybody who doesn't spend any time actually breaking down film. I want somebody whose eyes are on the TV watching that film. I know I'm not doing it because, well, I'm just not a very good scout, I'll be honest. But this guy is Brandon Pemberton. Let me ask you the question. As somebody who participated a lot himself in the trenches, playing semi-pro ball, I like to, you know, think I know a little bit about playing the offensive line. But to play at the NFL level, I mean, you have your top 10 on the NationalGridironNetwork.com, and hopefully we'll be up soon as well on ProPlayerInsiders.com. Before we get into that, what is your criteria? What is it you look for? What is it when you're watching the tape that you're breaking down from these guys?
When I'm looking at an offensive tackle, a guy who I feel will come in and be an offensive tackle, I'm looking for height. I'm looking for arm length. I'm looking for athleticism, power, explosion, nastiness, toughness, lateral quickness, agility, you know, leverage, what kind of pad level they play with, high hand placement. I'm looking for good vision, you know, the ability to pick up, you know, when the defensive lineman is stunting. His ability to work with the guard, you know, I'm going to pass this guy off to you and the next guy's coming to run. The ability to pick up that guy. And also, you know, a guy who bends at the knees, opposed to a guy that's a waist bender. A guy that's very athletic and is a natural knee bender, you know, he's the guy that you're looking for, the guy that's like a franchise tackle type guy. Because the more athletic you are, the more fit you are, your lower bottom is, you can bend at the knees, you can shuffle, you you can handle it when, you know, that guy, the defensive end, tries to translate speed to power. You can stymie that guy. You can bend with your knees. You can throw the punch. You can anchor down, and you can stop that guy. So that's some of the things I look for when I'm scouting, you know, these guys. And every guy doesn't have all of those things. There are guys that have a combination of some things, and there are guys who, you know, get away with not being very athletic, but they get by with technique. They get by with toughness. They don't quit. And, you know, a guy like that, somebody that I can remember vividly who got a, you know, who was able to play at a high level for a long time, that wasn't the most athletic guy, was John Runyon. John Runyon played with the Titans first, and then he left and came here to Philadelphia. And John Runyon wasn't a very athletic guy, but John Runyon was able to play right tackle for a long time at a high level because he was tough, he was technically sound, and he didn't quit. Now, he had his tough days. Michael Strahan used to kick his behind. You know what I mean? And Michael Strahan's the Hall of Famer. But John Runyon was a guy who was tough as nails, and he was technically sound. And he went out there every week, regardless if he was hurt, injured or not, and gave it his all at that right tackle spot for Steve McNair, and he did it for Donovan McNabb. So you have your different guys who had their different strengths, different weaknesses, and it's also key that NFL teams, you draft a guy that fits what you do, because every player isn't going to be a guy who fits in his own blocking scheme, who can make it to the second level and get to a linebacker. You know what I mean? You don't, every guy isn't a guy who plays in a man scheme and can blow up a 350-pound nose tackle in front of him and drive him 4, 5, 6 yards off the ball. Mm-hmm. Every guy has their own strengths and weaknesses, and you have to figure out who fits your system best. Because at the end of the day, that's what it's all about. Having a guy with talent is great, but putting that guy with the talent in the right position to succeed is what matters.
Yeah. And you know, it's funny. Like, that's not just true of O-linemen off the bat. But, you know, like, as an example, you say fitting the scheme. Like, for example, you got a tackle that, you know, can't get outside very quick. Well, he's a waste of time with the Texans, considering they would run most of their plays to the outside when they kept it on the ground, as an example. Fair enough. I'll work with that, too. I'm going to go ahead and bring him in because he's blowing my phone up. And, well, let's just put it this way, BP. You have fans wherever you go, including on the Sports Chronicles Radio Network, and the man himself, the head of the Sports Chronicles Radio Network, and, well, let's just put it this way, self-acclaimed draft expert, Nick Ficcarelli, is here with us. Nicky Fick, welcome to the table, sir.
I am not self-proclaimed. I never even said I was a draft expert. I'm just a guy that likes to sit back in Radio City Music Hall or wherever I may be and just watch teams make fools of themselves and listen to Mel Kiper bitch and moan about it on a daily basis. But that's just me.
Nick, what's up, bro?
What's up, BP? How you doing?
I'm doing great, man. How you doing?
Doing good. So I was just listening to you about your about John Runyon about not too long ago, and I have to unequivocally agree with you. I mean, the one little nitpicking thing I had about Runyon throughout his career was that if you were a speed rusher, he would always have, you know, an issue if they were to get through to his outside shoulder. But other than that, I mean, the guy did a yeoman job for both the Titans and the Eagles. I mean, he was a perennial Pro Bowler. I mean, you brought up Michael Strahan, and Michael Strahan pretty much owned the guy throughout his whole career in both spots. But he, what do you call it? If there was a model of consistency for the tackle position, John Runyon was the guy. He was, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, you know, highly coveted coming out of the University of Michigan by a lot of teams. And I believe Tennessee actually traded up to get him the year that he was in the draft. So, I mean, you look at the guys coming out now, like Jake Matthews and stuff like that. If there's a model that you want to put yourself up against with regards to those guys, it's John Runyon. Because let's be honest, we've seen once-in-a-lifetime tackles come and go. Anthony Munoz, Tony Baselli, you know, those guys. To me, those are like dime a dozen. Not dime a dozen, yeah. Like a once in a, my bad, once in a lifetime tackles that'll just come out and dominate the game on a week in, week out basis and consistently do it for years and years and years. I mean, Baselli, you know, it's pretty tragic that his career is pretty much cut short because of his the injuries to his shoulder, to both his shoulders. But these were guys that pretty much locked down the best defensive pass rusher that each team had. If you were a quarterback, you knew you had peace of mind because your blind side was pretty much going to be protected week in, week out.
Yes.
Okay. Well, that was...
Yeah, I mean, I...
Go ahead.
I'm saying I definitely agree. You know what I mean? Like, when I try to scout these guys, like, I try to go back in time and, you know, look at a Baselli, a Munoz, or Orlando Pace, or Walter Jones, Jonathan Ogden, Trey Thomas, you know what I mean? Different guys who, you know, I remember playing and remember how good they were. And then I used it as a prototype, you know what I mean, to look at the guys that I'm scouting on a yearly basis and be like, all right, well, you know what I mean? He has this skill set. He kind of looks like this guy and that guy. So, you know what I mean? And then, like, I was telling somebody, you know, I brought up Phil Loholt's name, right tackle for the Vikings. Phil Loholt wasn't a high draft pick for the Vikings. But Phil Loholt came into this league and has been a constant starter at the right tackle position for the Vikings. And one of the reasons why Adrian Peterson has been so successful as a running back, and he's also gotten better since he's gotten in the league and passed effect as well. So, I mean, like, just, you know, the tackle position, trying to – the offensive line is just as important as any position in football. If you don't have any offensive line, you can't play in this league. If you don't have two tackles who can pass block, and today in today's NFL, you need your right tackle to be just as good as your left tackle as far as pass protection. So just having two tackles, you know, you look at the Eagles this past year, they had Jason Peters came back off of the Achilles injuries and was right back to all pro level. They drafted Lane Johnson for a move that a lot of people here in Philadelphia didn't like because they didn't know much about Lane Johnson. But Lane Johnson, his first six games, you know, struggled technique wise. And then once his technique was down pat from games 7 through the rest of the season, you watched his athleticism just come loose. And he was very good the last part of the season. You can argue now that coming into this year, the Eagles may have the best tackle tandem in all of football. And that's very important when, you know, in today's NFL, when you're passing offense. Not only that, the Eagles might not, they might have the best athletic tackles in the league because both of those guys can get out on the second level. They can get out in the screen game. And, you know, when the Eagles run those quick screens and stuff, you see Lane Johnson, you see Jason Peters out there getting out there making blocks. So, you know, that's some of the things I look for when I'm scouting these guys.
Yeah, absolutely, and I like
what you're absolutely right. And hello?
Go ahead, Nick.
Oh, okay. Well, I didn't want to cut you off. It's your show.
Well, you already done that, but that's okay. Burn! No, but what I was wanting to get to is, you know, let's go ahead and get more into kind of the current guys here that you know, we got a good model of what BP's thinking when he's putting together his pieces for his tape. And on the top of your list, you have Jake Matthews out of Texas A&M, and you mentioned that he's not the typical run blocker per se. Is that the kind of guy you'd be looking for to fit into, like, and I mentioned this specifically, you know, not just because the Eagles and because we've been talking about DeSean Jackson and all that and Chip Kelly, but more because, to me, as an offensive lineman, I look at that scheme, and the first thing I think is, hey, this is why you got O-linemen who are running below the 5-second range in 40s now, which I think about that, and it already hurts my tummy with a cramp, but... You know, is that the kind of guy you're looking for to go to, like, an Eagle system? Or is this the kind of guy that you're looking for to protect more like, say, a Drew Brees and they get involved in that offense? Because in my mind, he's not going to fit with, say, a Carolina Panthers a Seattle Seahawks, a 49ers in San Francisco. I don't know. Your thoughts on that there, Brandon?
Oh, I mean, Jake Matthews is a player. You know, I mean, if you're looking for a guy that's going to be able to come in and play right away, he's that type of guy. I mean, he's the prototype left tackle. I mean, he's very technically sound. He has good footwork. He has athleticism to get out on the screen passes. You know, I mean, a lot of times, you know, they look at, you know, the arm length, and his arms aren't 34 inches. Well, they're 33 and 3/8. I mean, honestly, what if a guy's arms are 35 or 36 inches and he can't play? Jake Matthews has been born and bred to play offensive line in the NFL. I mean, he's a guy who, I mean, he was solid playing right tackle before he was moved to left. Luke Jokel, who was the second pick in the draft last year, Jake Matthews was a better player than him when he was a junior and Jokel was a senior. In my opinion, if Matthews would have came out in last year's draft, I would have took him over Jokel last year. I might have took him over Fisher last year. So, Jake Matthews, you have a better prospect than the two guys who went 1-2 last year. Is he a role grader? No. Can he get the job done in the run game? Yes. Is he a guy who's going to be able to protect your backside from day one? Yes, that's what you're getting in this guy. Hand placement, a guy who knows he's not the biggest guy, the nastiest guy, but he plays with great technique, hand placement, and leverage, and he's gotten it done for 2 years in a row since they went into the SEC from the Big 12. And, you know, he's been number one on my board as far as tackles all year. I know a lot of people, when the combine came around and they seen how Greg Robinson ran and moved around, that's fine and dandy. But projecting a guy to do something opposed to seeing what a guy is already able to do is, you know, that's two different things. I know for a fact what skill set Jake Matthews has as far as pass protection in the NFL. Greg Robinson, I don't know that right now because he hasn't had many reps and he wasn't asked to do the same thing.
Okay, yeah, no, that's fair enough too. I think and you know, I don't know if this is part of your process too, but kind of, you know, when I'm looking at players in general, not necessarily draft prospects, because again, I'm not claiming to be an awesome scout, but if I'm evaluating a guy, my first question is always going to be, can this guy block a JJ Sawat? Just as an example, because at some point in time, it's going to happen. Or is it going to be another situation like, you know, we were talking about John Runyon earlier. It just so happened that Michael Strahan was the perfect guy in every single category to just match up better against him. I mean, is it just going to be that kind of a rough day? Let's kind of take it a different direction there. Basically, there's a number of different schemes out there in the NFL, and I like the point you made best when you said something along the lines that it's more important. It's just as important to pick the right player for the system than it is to pick the best player in the draft. So I'm going to throw out a couple teams, and if you can come up with a name that you think would best fit said scheme, you know, that's kind of what I'm looking for there too, and just basically how they'll get involved or who would get involved best in this particular piece. And the first team I kind of had in mind, because, well, Nick's on the phone and I'm staring at Weasel right across from me, who's a Vikings fan himself. If you're the Minnesota Vikings, is your first pick in the first round, do you have any sort of alignment in contention for that pick?
I mean, I think as far as at the tackle position, they're fine. Now, you know, interior line, I do think they need some help. But, you know, with their first pick, obviously I wouldn't pick an interior lineman with that pick. I mean, the Vikings have to figure out, and Mike Zimmer and those guys have to figure out, is any of the quarterbacks, Bridgewater or Bortles, and they're only two on my board that had first-round grades, mm-hmm. are they worth that seventh pick? If not, then, you know, at the seventh pick, I need to pick a player who's going to be able to have an impact on my team. Is it Khalil Mack, you know, that could possibly have an impact on my team as far as the defense? Because the Vikings didn't have too many defensive impact players last year outside of Jared Allen.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they didn't have any guys at the linebacker position that was going out there making plays, getting hands on balls, causing fumbles. So, you know, right now the Vikings, where they're picking at, if I'm the Vikings and I don't feel as though that any of these quarterbacks are worth that seventh pick, then I'm looking at getting a playmaker, the best player possible. It may be a wide receiver. If Sammy Watkins somehow was there at seven, I would take Sammy Watkins. They have a lot of holes on that team, in my opinion. And if you don't have a quarterback ranked in your top 10, then you don't take the quarterback. You take their best player, and then you come back in the second round, and, you know, Jimmy Garoppolo might be there. You know, Derek Carr in the second round. You know, you go ahead and take that quarterback in the second round. I wouldn't reach for a quarterback if I'm not sold on that quarterback. But me personally, Teddy Bridgewater is a top 10 pick, in my opinion. Blake Bortles, you know, I can make an argument for him going in the top 10, top 15. Those are the only two quarterbacks I feel as though should be picked in the first round this year.
So somebody who's in my camp, you know, that doesn't see it when it comes to Johnny Manziel. We're going to be really good friends, BP. I can tell that already. Go ahead, Nick.
It pains me to say this. I mean, it really does pain me to say this, but I have to agree with you guys. This is someone that's been dying for a quarterback since the days of, Dante Culpepper, Randall Cunningham, you know, guys that can launch the ball no problem and stuff like that.
Warren Moon had a moment or two after suffering through a couple of years
of Christian Ponder.
Yeah.
What?
Warren Moon had a moment or two.
Anyway. a moment. Yeah, exactly. A moment or two. I mean, we've been playing musical quarterbacks since the days of Tommy Kramer and Wade Wilson, so, but that's a different story for
I'm hot
day.
For Gus Frerotte.
If I were the Vikings right now, I would actually do something different. And that would be maybe possibly at the eighth pick, look to trade down. And the reason why is because if Teddy Bridgewater for some reason is not available at eight, there's no way the Vikings are taking Johnny Manziel at eight. No way in hell. And they're not going to take a guard in the draft, although I am salivating at the fact of either having Xavier Suafilo or David Yankee on my interior offensive line grading defensive tackles down to Swiss cheese. But what do you call it? You're not going to take them at eight. You got to trade down to do something like that. You trade down. You see a team that's desperate, Cowboys, and try to get some extra draft picks that way to get in the middle of the draft, take what you need, and go for quality instead of just quantity. It's a known fact that a lot of teams in the NFL draft, let's face it, unless your name is Jadeveon Clowney or Sammy Watkins, in which you're pretty much the surefire bets in the draft, everyone is a reach. And taking a guard at eight, that's like fishing for Moby Dick. Let's just put it like that.
A reach,
I think,
too
trade
far.
Now. That's my opinion.
I got you. Okay.
Yeah, and I'm speaking of guards. I mean, this draft is one of the deeper drafts because of the amount of underclassmen that's in this draft right now. And, you know, when you're looking at the guard position, there are guys that are going to be around in the third, fourth round who add value. Another guard who I like very much, and I just got finished watching his film today, is Gabe Jackson out of Mississippi State. Gabe Jackson is a very good football player. Almost 6'4", 335 pounds. I mean, you're talking about a guy who, in the SEC in the last 2 years, took some of the best defensive tackles one-on-one and just erased them constantly in a run game. You know, has the ability to sit and anchor in the middle. You know, just the bull rush doesn't work on this guy. You might as well just not even try it. Gabe Jackson is an underrated prospect at the guard position. I know a lot of people like Yankee. But I watched Yankees film yesterday and watched Gabe Jackson today, and I like Gabe Jackson a lot better than David Yankee.
You know, I was actually thinking about Gabe Jackson as well. The only issue that I have with Gabe Jackson, and I, you'd be shocked, BP. I did watch a couple of games on Gabe Jackson because he's one of the guys I was hoping that maybe would be available if a team were to trade down or something like that. The only slight issue I have with Gabe Jackson is that there are some points during the game where he's very slow off the snap count. And even though he played in the SEC and put up a very good accounting of himself against some very strong interior line play, there were points during the game where he was slow off the ball and, you know, interior line would blow right by him. Whereas with Yankee, you know, he was pretty consistent all the way through. It's more of a crapshoot. It's more like what is more of a flavor when it comes to guard play. To be honest with you, I'd be happy with both. Hell, I'd be happy if we got both on our team. I don't see that happening, but you know, it would be nice. But you know, it seems like teams will have their, you know, scouts getting their opinions and stuff like that. So I mean. Yeah, what do you call it? To me, it's just between the two of them, it's a complete toss-up.
Well, let me go ahead and let me get Weasel in here to ask a question real quick about some of the draft action here. He has an opportunity to get a little answer from BP. Let me go ahead and get him in here. Weasel, what do you got?
All right. So about the offensive tackle rankings, I saw that y'all were talking about Jake Matthews, who's got, you know, his dad was a very dominant football player in the past. And
that's kind of an understatement, but we'll take it.
Yeah. Greg Robinson with Auburn and Taylor Lewan. Now, what I'm wondering is that based on a best player available, you still got the quarterbacks in there. You got the wide receiver, Sammy Watkins. Where would you put your top two picks, like Jake Matthews and Greg Robinson? You have them as first rounders, but where in the first round?
I believe Jake Matthews and Robinson are top five picks, in my opinion. You know, I actually, you know, if I had a month ago, before the combine and everything, I had my top 32 big board. I had Clowney, I had Matthews, I had Robinson as my top three players in the draft. And I still, you know, had those guys right now as my top three players in the draft. So I would have Clowney 1, Matthews 2, and Greg Robinson 3.
Wow.
Well, that puts a bow on it for you, doesn't it, Weasel?
Yeah, that works.
This guy isn't playing around when it comes to the tackle action here. And, hey, look, to the choir you preach on that, I mean, it's, you know, it's always be first in the philosophy of the student of the game. That's all I've said about that the entire time. Gentlemen, we are starting to get close to the end point there. Let me go ahead and let you go, Nick. Thank you for jumping on here and contributing to the conversation. Tell the good people where they can find you at, sir.
You can find me on Twitter at @NAF_TSCRN. Normally I have a show on Saturday night, but right now it's on hiatus a little bit. But you can find me sneaking in on a few certain shows during the game in which I would like to talk sports and, you know, have a good time with some good friends and stuff like that. And, oh, yeah, Kyle, I got one word for you. Burn!
Yeah, exactly. Well, hey, and I want the record to show, my brother, not one time did I mention the name Joe Flacco while you were on tonight. And I want credit that I've put that mistake of yours behind
me. Did.
Oh, damn it. My bad.
You just taped it.
All right, my man. Thanks for checking in. I'll see you later.
Take it easy.
All right. That was Nick Ficarelli. Now, BP, I have a question for you. And you could take it seriously or you can have a silly answer. I'm pretty sure you'll know the answer to this better than most anybody I've asked it to, except for maybe Andrew Whitworth himself. But he happens to be a lineman for the Bengals, so I should hope he has a good answer. But when it comes to the combine, something that's always boggled my mind, sir, is the fact that they have offensive linemen do the vertical jump. My question is why? What exactly do they get out of that?
I mean, like the vertical jump for a guy that big, you can what you got out of it is what kind of lower body explosion that they have. You know what I mean? Now, the vertical jump and the broad jump is something that I look at with the offensive linemen to see the lower body explosion. And that's one of the things that impressed me so much about Greg Robinson, and it translates to what you see on the field with him, the lower body explosion. You know, he had a vertical leap almost 30 inches, and he weighed 330-something pounds, and he had a broad jump of over 9 feet. Guys 6'6", 300-something, 30 pounds aren't supposed to be able to do that.
No, they're not.
That's just the bottom line. But when you see that from him, and you go watch his film, and you go and you see him come off the ball and take his man and then knock his man down and another defender and cave in the line, that's what you get out of it. Does that mean that if a player has a low vertical leap that he's not going to be a good football player? No. I mean, you know, that it really doesn't, but it gives you a gauge. That along with the 10-yard split with the 40-yard dash, it gives you, you know, what kind of short area explosion a guy has. But that still doesn't say, you know, when you look at certain stuff in the combine, that the guy can't play football. You know what I mean? When I look at offensive linemen, the best thing for me to look at, and the best thing for me to look at in any football player is what they do when it's 21 other guys in the field and the helmet and shoulder pads are on.
Amen. Gotta love that tape, and that's why we go to UBP, because I know you are checking it all out. Fantastic time, and just like I talked about on Twitter, this hour is not enough to contain all the awesome. I have plenty more questions. We could probably go on talking and having a great time here, but I got to let you go. But before you go, BP, tell the people where they can find the wonderful Brandon Pemberton.
You can find me on Twitter at Brandon on Sports, Facebook.com/Brandon on Sports. Tuesday nights, tomorrow night, NGN Weekly, 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. Tomorrow will actually be our first night doing our show on Google Hangouts, if I'm not correct. Me, Shukri Wrights, Ralph Garcia, John Doucette. Then on Thursdays, 12 p.m. to 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on the Sports Chronicles Radio Network, Sports Trap Radio. Every Thursday this week, I have two interviews scheduled for Thursday, with one with Townsend running back Terrence West, who had his pro day today. And then at 1:30, Tennessee Martin, wide receiver Jeremy Butler. So be sure to tune in on Thursday. We get digging in deep with the draft gems, you know, as I do. You know, the small school guys, can come in the league and they play and they produce as well. Joe Flacco came from the University of Delaware.
Yes, he did.
You know what I mean? So, you know what I mean? It's prospects all over who can play his game. Billy Turner, a guy who was on my tackle list, guy played for North Dakota State, is going to be a guy who's going to surprise a lot of people. The small school guy, played for FCS school, he's going to probably be a late second, you know, somewhere second or third round.
90 seconds.
I'd be surprised if he made it to the fourth round. So the small school guys can ball as well.
Absolutely, my man. Brandon Pemberton, thank you very much. And we got you out just in time for you to put your NBA draft scout hat on, too, as well. I know I'll be checking out Sports Trap Radio, not live, but I will be definitely doing it on Spreaker while I'm at work, man. Looking forward to that for sure. Thank you very much, BP.
Hey, no problem, man. Thanks for having me on. All right, Weasel, have a good one, bro.
You too. Good hearing from you.
60 seconds.
And that'll do it for the great and wonderful Brandon Pemberton. Man, it's a good time.
Word.
Am I lying, Weasel?
Hey, good times.
He even gave you a pretty solid shout out right there. He's like, hey, man, have a good time. I was like, I can't front on that.
Word.
I'm with it all. And you know, you can be with it all every week when you listen to the Student of the Game. Follow us on Twitter at the SOTG. Now that I have the studio repaired and up and running the way it needs to be, thestudentofthegame.com, thesotg.com, will be housing it. And of course, you can check us out on NationalGridironNetwork.com. Check out the writings from the NGN on NationalGridironNetwork.com or ProPlayerInsiders.com. We'll be coming across all sorts of awesome stuff like BP's draft rankings, my interviewing Richard Sherman, all that kind of stuff there coming out live right at you. iHeartRadio, Spreaker, we're available all over, running the gambit. And of course, look out for us on Google Hangout soon. Until next time, friends, class dismissed.